SBC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
10 years ago, when states first started considering online gaming, the fighting over the impact of that expansion on land-based casinos was intense. However, once New Jersey's rollout of online casino coincided with a complete revitalization of Atlantic City, the debate seemed to die down. This year, though, the debate has raged back to life with a wide range of studies telling us a wide range of stories about iGaming's impact. Even labor unions are coming into the debate. So, who is right and who is wrong? We'll try to figure that out on today's episode of iGaming Daily. iGaming Daily is presented by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalized player experiences with Optimove. And you can too. Just a reminder, Optimove is offering new clients a free first month when they buy Optimove. For more information and to claim that free month, go to optimove.com/SBC. I'm Jessica Wellman, editor of SBC Americas, joined by media manager Charlie Horner. And Charlie, I don't often miss, I always miss you, but I feel like I especially am jealous of you because you don't have to do the deep dive into cannibalization that I have this year. There's so many studies and so many things. So as someone who isn't kind of covering it day to day, I'm curious what has kind of come onto your radar and what have you been seeing and hearing about the debate? Because I'm knee deep in it.
Yeah, for listeners who can't see, Jess actually showed me a huge pile of papers that she's been sifting through, because she's actually got the report in physical copy that we're going to be talking about today. So I wasn't so jealous. But yeah, this is a huge debate. It's seemingly been going on ever since I've been covering the North American industry. From conversations I've had with people, and I have actually had this conversation in the last few weeks for something I've been writing. Generally, the online and land-based casinos should be treated as separate products and separate verticals that cater to different types of people. So there's not necessarily going to be a huge hit or a huge swing one way or another. So yeah, you're knee-deep in it. I've had conversations around it. Let's dive into it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so you are voicing what I think most people within the industry, you know, we look at, and again, we're talking about a very nascent industry, right? The oldest market for this is New Jersey, and that's 11 years old at this point, which, you know, is an elementary schooler in people age. But what we saw when this happened, you were in school and not following this, but when this was going on in New Jersey, Atlantic City was really struggling. You know, it had too many casinos. It seemed like several were kind of closing. It seemed like a natural point in the market where there was downsizing. And it was not a good time to be a land-based casino in New Jersey. And then this new vertical brought in a lot of extra money and capital to casinos that really needed it. And in that subsequent 10 years, we've seen Hard Rock come in. We've seen Ocean Resort finally take this property that had been like several different properties and failed many times over and actually make it successful. And we've seen the iGaming industry post-COVID really just shoot up there. And so we look at New Jersey as this success story, and you look at Pennsylvania and you kind of are looking at the land-based casino revenues, and it didn't seem like they were particularly changing. So you're right that most people kind of were saying, it seems like it's a different customer base altogether. It's people that wouldn't really go to land-based casinos. It's a lot of older women who, you know, are home and they're bored and they want to do something to entertain themselves for a little while. And maybe you convert some of that over with an omni-channel experience, but that it's a different vertical of the business catering to a different audience. What's happened now is that these studies are kind of looking beyond the simple, okay, well, month over month, we're seeing that casinos are still doing okay, even though they have online casinos, to now factoring in a lot of different things. Would this growth have happened if online gaming didn't come in? So they're looking and projecting, how much money would they have made if nothing had changed? You know, how much, like, would we have more casinos, fewer casinos? Would they have opened? Would they have closed? Are there some operators that are maybe getting more of a benefit than others? And they're taking a lot of theory into these studies. And that's where things start to get really murky. So, you know what? We're going to make a game out of this. I'm going to put Charlie on the spot. I'm going to name a study, and you're going to tell me whether you think this is a pro or con can a online casino group. The one that we're going to talk about a little bit today, the one from Sports Betting Alliance, do you think they're going to come up, the results are going to be pro or against online casino?
Pro.
Correct. How about the IDEA study from Eilers and Krejcik?
Pro.
Also pro. Nira from the Campaign for Fairer Gambling.
Con.
Correct. The Anne Arundel Chamber of Commerce, which is a local group in Maryland.
Con.
Correct. And the Innovation Group study on Maryland.
Pro?
It's con, but it's con with a lot of context, to do a silly pun there. And I'm guessing you were able to guess that purely because of who was commissioning the study.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very fundamental part of covering these reports is you've got to understand who's producing them, who's paying for them, and ultimately what their agenda is. What result do they want? Because if you're dealing with any sample size of a data set, you can manipulate the numbers to project almost any outcome that you want. So it's really important that we do look at who is paying for these.
Yeah, and so to talk about the SBA one that came out today, Sports Betting Alliance is Fanatics, DraftKings, BetMGM, and FanDuel. It's a trade group, the four of them. They obviously all would stand to benefit from online casino expansion in these states. I will say, like, it's a very robust study commissioned from the group is called Analysis. It sounded made up, I'll be honest. Analysis Group. It just sounded very vague, right? I've not heard of them before. The Analysis Group. They essentially looked at, you know, they looked at two sets of states. They looked at states with iGaming, and they looked at states that were potentially considering it, like Virginia, New York, Louisiana, Maryland, and Illinois, I think, is the fifth one. Looked at what their five-year projections are without online casino, with online casino. They also surveyed a couple thousand people in these various states to get a sense of what the appetite is and how those appetites kind of compare. And the general gist is that in states with iGaming, the revenue increase has been about 2%, which lines up with what the Eilers study says, that IDEA study. You can hear me rustling through papers, I hope, because I literally had a highlighter, I had a pen. I felt like I was back in college again. One of the interesting things I found in this study that they did pull out is looking at their models. What they did do, too, is looked at sports betting revenue to kind of give an idea of how that would kind of translate using existing iGaming states to then project to the non-iGaming ones. They said the 22 model indicates every dollar in sports betting revenue per adult is associated with $2.14 in iGaming revenue. For 2023, the number is $2.16. So they were essentially taking kind of how sports betting has performed to determine how big the iGaming market can be. The thing that nobody's debating, if you bring iGaming, it's going to be a huge new market for you, and it's going to bring in a ton of tax revenue. Nobody's really questioning that part, right? The question is there an impact? The Innovation Group is a study that was actually commissioned by the state of Maryland. So this is the most interesting one to me because the state doesn't really have this, they were just told, rather than create a study to kind of give us what we want, here are questions we want answered, and go do whatever work you need to get to those answers. And the answers that they got to were, from what they can tell, there's a chance that up to about 10% of your land-based revenue could be taken away as a result of online gambling. Let's just pause on that. 10% is not a huge number, right? It's not massive.
Yeah, it's not going to mean that you have to lay off all of your staff and close down. And yeah, it's compared to, you know, what some people might make you think that could be cut off from land-based casinos revenue. I don't think it's the end of the world.
I will say, you know, what the Anne Arundel Chamber of Commerce study looked at was the job impact. And they were saying it was something like 600 in the vicinity jobs that would potentially be lost. Because I think in any business in this economy in the United States right now, if your revenues are down, there's certainly a chance you're going to cut costs in some way, and labor could be that cost. So again, though, that's like the highest end of this, 10%. And I'll give you this, that anti-gambling people have pulled the most alarmist numbers out of this innovation group study. I'll tell you, having read it, they couch a lot of things. They're like, listen, it's really hard on some of these things. In Michigan, we had the Detroit casinos closed down because of a strike. We had COVID. We had, in the case of, you know, like a state like Maryland, they haven't had casinos in general that long, so they don't have that much data. That it's a lot of guesswork. And they're saying there are a lot of things you should take with a grain of salt about this number, but this is the best guess that we can put forward.
Yeah, I think that's why it's so important to take a look at the provenance of these studies, because no one state or no two states or no any states can be truly compared to each other, because everything's different. Everyone's got different stories. Every state's got a different context. But however, having said that, the fact that you mentioned the innovation group study was done on behalf of the state, that's quite interesting, because ultimately the argument around this should be framed with the lawmakers as the audience. You can commission and produce these studies for us, the press, for public relations or for voters or whatever, but ultimately we need to change lawmakers' minds. And for the fact that the innovation group's study has projected a 10% cut to revenue, yeah, I mean, that's probably going to have some impact on the thinking of the lawmakers.
Yeah, I think too, what the innovation group study points out is that it also depends on what kind of model you have. And the SBA study kind of hinted at this as well. If you look at Delaware, it's a real funky model where it's like, it's the lottery that runs it, but casinos get to like rev share in it. And there's just one operator that was 888 for a long time and has only recently switched to Rush Street Interactive. And like, that didn't help anybody. Like, it's, you look at all the data and all this study and it's the weird outlier state. Whereas both Michigan and New Jersey were cited even by the innovation group as like, this is a pretty good model. There's lots of skins. There's lots of opportunities to get involved. Those skins are held by the casino owners. There's not a finite opportunity to get into the market. But it also depends on how you set it up too. You know, if you did like a lottery monopoly, the impact would, I would think, probably be less, just because we've seen that those products are just tend to not be as good as other options.
SBC Leaders connects the gambling industry's top tier operators and associations to share the best ideas, collaborate on solving the biggest issues, and push innovation throughout the betting and gaming industry. If you're an operator and want to join the discussion, visit sbcleaders.com for more information.
Let me ask you a question then, because we look at iGaming expansion and the potential for it every year. When this time of year comes around, we're always wondering where could we look at, and the cannibalization debate always comes around. But it seems to have really taken over the debate within Maryland this year. Why do you think that is? Is that because these studies are all being published at once? Is that because this is the debate that the lawmakers want, or is it something else?
It's a few different things, but to kind of give you a question back, do you know which gaming companies are against online casino?
Surely those who have land-based casinos but not online presences.
Yeah. Cordish mm-hmm. Companies is one that has been just like, listen, we don't want this. And Maryland Live is a very big casino in Maryland. And that is a state where Cordish, more than other states, has an outsized influence on things that they're getting into lobbyists' ears. Churchill has generally, they've not openly come out, but if you look at the Mississippi online sports betting hearings and what we're seeing and which individual properties are talking in Maryland, Churchill Properties, and as we know, Churchill got out of the online gaming space because they couldn't succeed, are against it. There's an assumption in all of these pro studies, right? And they go on this at length in the SBA study that, you know, if you have a good omni-channel strategy, this should benefit your bottom line. But that's the assumption, is that everybody has a good omni-channel strategy. Not everybody is BetMGM. Not everybody is Caesars. So this is something that you can do all the studies you want. At the end of the day, there are winners and there are losers in this. And Craig Billings, the CEO of Wynn, had a very good LinkedIn post where he's like, I don't think anybody is suggesting that this wouldn't be tax dollars for the state and an opportunity for people to succeed. But my job as the CEO of this company is to protect my share of the TAM. And if we're going to throw in a new industry in which I'm fully aware that my company is not poised to succeed with an omni-channel approach the same way others are, that's not protective to my TAM. I think when we were first doing these, nobody really knew who the winners and losers were going to be when we did New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And now, like, it's pretty clear who's winning and who's losing. And the people who are losing are like, well, we're not interested.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we should mention Wynn closed. Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're
all
they've
but
got
closed down its
all
interactive
but Nevada.
Division.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, not surprised really to see Billings come down on the against side. It's certainly an interesting debate that's come at a really pivotal time.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, I don't think anything's going to come of it this year is the funny part, which I guess, you know what, if you're the anti side, that's a victory, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely. But it does feel like the steps are being put in place for this to happen over 2, 3, 4 years time, with the momentum that's gathering on the pro side and the fact that there are these reports that are being produced. There are conversations or serious conversations that are happening within the state house, which we haven't really seen too much of before. I know there isn't a plethora of iGaming states that are lining up to join the queue, but to see Maryland go so far in considering it is probably a positive in and of itself.
Absolutely. I mean, the bill did get out of the house over the weekend. It's been amended a fair amount. We'll see how much. I've been told there's not an appetite for this in the Senate. And I think actually Senate leadership has gone on record that there's not a lot of appetite for this in the Senate. But a government affairs person, I just realized I'm about to use a metaphor that's completely lost on you, Charlie, but he called putting a bill through kind of like the baseball Hall of Fame, where there's voting every year and you put the guy's name out the first year so he gets 3 votes. And then the next year, they're like, oh yeah, I didn't get him last year, I should get him this year. So the next year he gets, 20 votes. And by year 4 or 5, you get in. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that this is going to have to work. What I think is the most interesting part of this is these arguments weren't happening last year. You know, there were the Family Foundation people coming in. We don't like online gambling as a concept. But other than all I can think of is that one kind of fiscal note from Indiana that was based on really outdated research that was anti, but like you were writing every day. Do you remember this conversation last year?
I saw it sort of bubbling under, but it certainly wasn't at the level that it is this year. I mean, the cannibalization debate, like I said, towards the top, it's one of those that you do hear every time it comes around, but not to this extent. That's probably because, like you say, this is going to take 3, 4, 5 years to happen. And the hurdles are being overcome slowly but surely. And those who are against have to do more to put up more defense to stop this from happening.
Yeah. And the voices against are growing louder and, you know, gaining allies like labor. We talked about this 2 weeks ago when we were talking about bills, and I kind of mentioned Maryland off the cuff. Like, when you get local business owners and local employees to come in and be the sad sob story face of things, it makes things a lot harder. So I don't think we'll get anything this year, but I do think the industry is certainly learning. I don't think you commission a 167-page study unless you feel like you really need to. So we'll keep an eye on Maryland for this year. I don't have high hopes, but keep tuning into SBC Americas to see if we have news on that, as well as all of the other legislative goings on. Charlie, anything on your end that the people should go and be checking out this week?
Yeah, later this week we'll have an interview with the CEO of Radar, who are looking to come in and talk about geolocation within the industry. They've come from a background outside of gaming, and they've seen an opportunity to service the North American gaming industry. So yeah, take a look at that when that comes out later this week.
Oh. There's another industry that people get very, very contentious when you try to hone in on their turf. So I'm going to be looking forward to that one. All right, guys, you check that out. Check out SBC Americas. And of course, tune in every day for all the latest gaming news on iGaming Daily.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.